So this might be the most serious episode of the Pete the Planner podcast in what we believe to be well over 500 episodes. Joining me now to discuss from the top is Damian Dunn. Hello, Dame.
Hello, Pete.
First off, no one freak out. Everyone's okay within the show. And there's no one, like, this isn't like a sad thing. Although, Dame, we are talking about a very, very serious topic today. And we're going to handle it with the seriousness that it deserves. As regular listeners might note, my tone's a little different today, Dame. We're going to try to keep it that way.
I think it's in everybody's best interest that we do that. And it's not because Kristen isn't here. I mean, it's just a twist of fate that we're discussing this on a week that she is out traveling on behalf of us and changing the lives of financial lives of others across this great country of ours. So sorry, Kristen, better luck next time. But here we are.
To cut to the chase, Dame, today we have a crossover episode that may take us down a genre of podcast that I never really expected to be a part of.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We are dipping our toes into the waters of a true crime podcast today, and we have the documents. So here's what we're doing today. And hello, everyone, by the way. Hello, all our regular listeners. We love you very much. And for those that have never listened before, because you've somehow seen this on the internet, because I kind of get that feeling this is about to happen. Mm-hmm. Welcome. The show is a money show. I'm Peter Dunn, Pete the Planner, Damian Dunn, who oddly enough, despite the fact that we look like two sides of the same thumb, are not related. Dame, are we in fact not related?
Well, we still haven't. No, we have. No, we're not.
I'm not doing a 23andMe or I'll end up on a true crime podcast. Today, we are going further in our quest to protect people from unscrupulous financial advisors. So much so that this past week, a lawsuit was filed in Hamilton County Court in the state of Indiana, and we're going to cover the entire lawsuit. It is, in my opinion, absolutely shocking. It is exactly what Damian, Kristen, and I have been talking about in terms of if you search out and do your due diligence of your advisor, you will find things that will impact your willingness to do business with them. And Dame, this is the perfect, unbelievable example of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to try and sensationalize anything, but if we would have tried to think of a case that would have potentially hit all the right buttons, this is pretty darn close.
So here's what you will not get from us today. You will not get our normal levity. I'm very sorry about that, but I do think you will be engaged all the same, because this is pretty intense. So during, for those, again, listening for the first time, we're a podcast, but we're actually a radio show as well. In the midst of the podcast, we record a radio show. You will hear us do segments 1, 2, 3, and 4. They're sort of just radio benchmarks. It's sort of a long story, not worth explaining. You'll see how it works here in just a second. And we're going to do very little talking on the podcast. Instead, we're going to save the meat for the radio audience as well. This airs in various radio markets throughout Indiana, and it airs on the weekends. So listening to it live now, you are getting it first. On Tuesday, our podcast releases, and who knows what's going to happen between now and then. Dame, a couple housekeeping rules before we get started. And I don't know, do you think I should go through the difference between criminal and civil court on the air? Or do you think I should do that now?
I think it would behoove us to make sure we do that on air.
Okay, we'll start there. Yeah. So let's go ahead and do this, though. These are accusations. It is a complaint, and it will play out in civil court. It is quite possible criminal charges come after this that are on the tails of these alleged torts, I believe. Now I'm just really, really stretching myself here.
Yeah, how's that liberal arts education paying off for you?
Kind of good, but I mean, I don't know if they're torts or not, but I will say this, and I will say this a couple different times. I did have the opportunity to speak with the complainant's attorney on the phone this morning to seek comment. He is very much looking forward to their chance to make their case in civil court. And he is primarily interested in recapturing the funds of his clients, and to the tune of $2.6 million. This is very, very tough to go through today. So this will be interesting. I take it for all our normal listeners who follow along in the live chat, just know that we love to have fun. Today we will just try to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone else. So Dame, is that enough disclaimers before we get started?
Yeah, I don't think we need to say much more because we'll end up repeating ourselves in just a few seconds.
Yes, that's the truth. So we are going to stretch out the story amongst the three segments, and we are going to have to get to it because there's a lot on the bone here. Okay, so let's get after it. Dame, do you get your timer ready?
Ready.
Got my timer ready. Here goes nothing. In three, two. This week on the Pete the Planner Show, we don't answer your money questions. We're digging deep into a court case that has hit Hamilton County, Indiana courts this week. It is a civil complaint, and it involves malfeasance of a financial advisor who has reportedly stolen $2.6 million for clients. We're going to cover that at length this entire show today. There will be rules. Joining me is Damian Dunn, one of my co-hosts. Hello, Damian.
Hello, Pete.
No relation.
None.
Still important. One of the rules. Dame, this is a civil lawsuit. These are not criminal charges. It is possible that this lawsuit we cover today will end up in criminal charges. And I want to give a quick primer on the difference between criminal and civil court because I think it's very important. Number one, criminal lawsuits, the goal is to hold the defendant accountable to the state, okay? The state being an entity. Civil lawsuit, the goal is to hold the defendant accountable to the victim. Mm-hmm. Fair?
Yes.
State prosecutes and controls the case in criminal lawsuits, and the victim initiates and controls the case in civil lawsuits. This is going well. I'm about to read for an hour, and I can't read. The victim is a witness and does not have the right to direct the prosecution of the case or to veto the prosecutor's decisions in a criminal court, whereas the victim is a party, is entitled to all important information relating to the case and can make decisions about the direction of the case, such as settlement of the claim in civil court. There's a couple other really important elements I want to get to. In criminal court, state must prove that the perpetrator is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Okay. Mm-hmm. In civil court, victim must prove that it is more likely than not that the perpetrator is liable. And so, Damian, with that, we go to the case of Gregory and Catherine Hill, plaintiffs, versus Alexander Joyce, Rejoice Financial LLC, Rejoice Wealth Management LLC, and Joel Parity. Alexander Joyce is a notable financial person in the state of Indiana and central Indiana, has done numerous broadcasts, paid media, and the like, and has a weekly television show on various affiliates throughout the state of Indiana. And so, Dane, we're going to jump right into the case, and I'm going to be reading exactly from the complaint. And the complaint was filed at 11:56 a.m. on 2/26/24, and here we go. At all times relevant hereto, the defendant, Rejoice Financial LLC, was a purported retirement, estate, and tax planning advisor owned and managed by Alexander Joyce. Rejoice's financial principal place of business is in Carmel, Indiana. At all times relevant hereto, defendant Rejoice Wealth Management was a registered investment advisory firm. Rejoice was previously registered from May of 2018 through December of 2020. Then it failed to renew. Rejoice then re-registered on October 17th, 2023, months after it received a wire transfer of $2,599,372.22 from the Hills, the plaintiffs, on July 31st of 2023. I want to talk about this for a second, Damian, aside from the complaint. What we're seeing here is that funds were accepted to be invested months, July 31st to October 17th. Those are months in which the person wasn't actually registered to give financial advice.
Yeah, that's a big red flag, but unless somebody was doing their due diligence on their side to make sure that everything was on the up and up, there's no reason that they would have known or suspected that the plaintiff's side.
To your point, but what you and I have been talking about on this show for years, if not months, is if you're going to do business with someone, and we are not victim shaming, we are 1,000% not victim shaming, you have to do a broker check. You have to do research on the people that you're giving your money to. Back to the complaint. The Hills saw a TV commercial for Rejoice Financial and Rejoice Wealth in the summer of 2023 and thought it would be a good fit for their investment needs. The Hills met with defendant Alexander in person on or about June 26, 2023 in his Carmel, Indiana office. During this meeting, defendant Alexander stated he would personally handle their account as their investment advisor. Damien, I'm guessing you have some thoughts.
Yeah, that's a big problem. That is misrepresentation at best by the defendant in this case. You can't say that you are going to manage somebody's investments if you are not licensed to do so. This is very basic in the financial advising world.
Back to the complaint. Defender Alexander did not disclose that he was not a registered investment advisor at that meeting. On July 18th, 2023, the Hills met with Alexander and Joel Parity to sign an application to complete the transfer and enter into an investment advisor arrangement. A copy of that application is Exhibit A in this criminal complaint. Damien, you and I have both reviewed it as an aside. Alexander, back to the complaint, Alexander did state that the Hills money would be invested at TD Ameritrade. Quick thought, Damien. TD Ameritrade is a very popular place for investment advisors to have assets held, and then they manage the assets through TD Ameritrade. So on the surface right now, just so everyone knows, that all sounds very normal. Everything that's very normal, no alarm bells going off other than the fact that this was all done while not a registered investment advisor.
Correct.
Back to the complaint. Defendant Alexander further told the Hills that their money would be personally managed by him. The agreement Defender Alexander had the Hills sign was part of a document package for persons interested in buying fund units of Perpetual Trust Services Limited, an Australian-based investment company that provides mutual funds managed by JP Morgan Asset Management Australia. Neither Defendant Alexander nor Rejoice Financial or Rejoice Wealth had a relationship with Perpetual Trust Services. None of this information was disclosed to the Hills. Defendant Alexander filled out another form when meeting with the Hills titled Investor Due Diligence. A quick thought, Damien, you and I have both also reviewed that. And I will note, it is a very standard due diligence form and no alarm bells should have been going off in the Hills in our expert opinions.
Correct.
Back to the complaint. This form indicated that it was a Foundations Investment Advisor LLC form and part of the packet to establish an investment advisor client relationship with Foundations. Foundations confirmed Foundations confirmed that during July 2023, the only person who should have been providing investment advisory services was Joel Parity, as an aside, Dame, who's also named in the suit.
Correct.
Back to the complaint. This form was signed by Joel Parity as the investment advisor and lists Defendant Alexander as servicing advisor and as a solicitor. Defendant Alexander's statement to the Hills that he would personally handle their account and his further interactions go beyond the scope of an investment advisory solicitor. Dame, well, here's what we're going to do as an aside. We're going to take a break for the radio audience here. And when we come back, that's when things actually heat up quite a bit. Okay, so we've just given you all the background. We've given you the discussion of what is in this complaint. When we come back, it is going to get interesting. It is going to get incredibly interesting. We bring this to you today on the air, not for entertainment purposes, but we want you to understand how serious these situations are, and we don't want you to ever be a part of one of these situations as the victim. Because this is what can happen when you don't look into the background of your investment advisor. We are not victim shaming. We are allies of the victims. We just want to make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else. We will continue this conversation next, right here on the Pete the Planner Show. I'm Pete the Planner. All right, Dame, so far, it actually hurts my bones to be this serious. I'm shaking, not because I'm angry or anxious. It's hard for me to not say kind of funny things.
Less than 20 minutes to go.
I right now I want to say something clever, and I just doesn't feel like the venue.
No, this is not the venue, nor the time, nor the place. Next week.
We did some research, and I don't think this is important to go on the air. We did some research to verify the registration status. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Rejoice Wealth Management LLC was registered and failed to renew on December 31st of 2020. And where that gets a little interesting is, again, they re-registered under Rejoice Wealth Management, no LLC, and that matters. Name changes, it actually does matter. It matters a lot. 10/17/2023. So this is in the midst of all of this going on. And Dame, when we come back from the, when we go back into the show here, I'm going to point this out, or maybe in the next segment, there's also something criminal going on here. During this time frame, the fall of 2023,
yes,
with Alexander Joyce,
yes,
that provides some context, I believe, important context to this suit. But we'll get back to that in a second. So let's. Yeah.
That, by the way, is not alleged. It is settled. It's nothing that we are hypothesizing on. It is, yeah, a criminal.
Let's just put it this way. I can show you the booking photo if you want, and time served. Released from jail during this time frame.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back at it. You ready, buddy?
Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Back on the Pete the Planner Show. Different episode today, folks. If you listen on the weekends, we are going through a criminal complaint that was filed on February 26, 2024 in the state of Indiana in the county of Hamilton. Gregory and Catherine Hill, plaintiffs versus Alexander Joyce, Rejoice Financial LLC, Rejoice Wealth Management LLC, and Joel Parody. First segment of the show, we went through the background. And I just want to note, if you missed it, we're not going to cover all of that again, because we've already covered it. Go to PeteThePlanner.com and get our podcast on Tuesday. Or you can go to youtube.com/PeteThePlanner and you can watch the live stream of this episode as it occurred on Friday at 10 a.m. on March 1st. Damian Dunn joins me as always. Damian, these are accusations. This is a complaint. Alexander Joyce and the other parties will either find themselves held liable or they will not. It's not a matter of innocence and guilt. That's not a thing in civil court. And so let's continue on where we last left off. Alleged victims were presented with Australian investments of which the accused didn't have a relationship with. Back to the complaint. On or about July 26, 2023, defendant Alexander had the Hills fill out an ACH form and stated that it was needed to complete transfer to TD Ameritrade. Quick aside, an ACH firm, as most people know, is a kind of like a wire transfer. You're just transferring money out of one account into another. ACH, I'm sure we could look it up. It's, what's it stand for, Dan?
Well, automated clearinghouse, I believe.
Great. Now we're guessing.
Could be wrong.
All right. Back to the complaint. The ACH transfer form was blank. And when asked, Alexander stated that he would get the account number from TD Ameritrade and complete the form. Information gathered by the securities division I need to make an aside. There is a separate legal case going on right now with the Indiana Secretary of State's Office Securities Division on this case. Okay. Back to the complaint. Gathered by the Securities Division show that the $2,599,372.22 of the Hills that the defendant Alexander stated would be wired into account on July 31st, 2023, on behalf of the Hills was instead wired into a business bank account belonging to Rejoice Wealth with defendant Alexander as the signer of the account. Damien, thoughts?
You do not take custody of client funds into your own account. That you do not. That is a big, big problem. It goes directly to the receiving firm, preferably from the transferring firm directly, and your hands stay completely clean of it. This is a big no-no.
And here's why, as we go back to the case, back to the complaint. Less than 1 hour after the Hills money was wired to the account, Rejoice Wealth transferred $2,092.68 to LandQuest Title Services, DBA Dominion Title, for purchase of real estate at 1122 Laurel Wood, Carmel, Indiana, 46032, in the name of Rejoice Wealth. Damien, an aside, I have thoughts, I have receipts. I'd like to draw your attention, if you're watching the live stream, to the screen right now while I show you the $2 million home that was purchased. It was purchased, last sold on August 1st of 2023. The close date was August 1st of 2023, sold for $2 million even. It is a 27,285 square foot home, six bedroom, 11 baths, unfinished, right? So Dame, this is a shell of a home. And I will stop there, because the next piece of context is wildly important. I'm going to keep that screen up for those watching. And if you're listening on the radio, I encourage you to go to youtube.com/PeteThePlanner, and you can see the visuals here. Back to the complaint. The account where defrauded investor money was placed was created on May 5th, 2018. And at the time of the transfer, July 31st, 2023, had a balance of approximately $42,697.21. It was never disclosed to the Hills that their money was used to purchase real estate titled to defendant Alexander's business, Rejoice Wealth. In his haste, defendant Alexander overpaid the title company by $69,338.18. When informed of this overage, defendant Alexander emailed back, quote, right on, comma, can you just send a check to, and then he listed, as an aside, he listed his home address, which I'm just choosing not to read on the air. Mm-hmm. Back to the complaint, he gives his home address in Carmel, Indiana, 46032, made out to me, please. Okay, so that is the end of the quote. He gives his address, 46032, made out to me, please. Within days, defendant Alexander then attempted to acquire a mortgage on the Laurel Wood property for $6,325,000. Dame, I have thoughts. I've done some research. It is my understanding on background that this mortgage application was denied. I can't say that with great certainty. Yeah. It is based on my research what I have been told.
That's a little head scratching, isn't it?
I talked to a local real estate expert, and by expert, I mean, this person knows everything. This person has built homes in this very area. And the hypothesis here, and this is, I'm speculating, and it doesn't have anything to do with the case, but I'm speculating that the property was going to be flipped in mm-hmm. some capacity. It was a $2 million sticks sort of project that hasn't been finished. You take some money, you put some money into the house, you finish it, and then you either flip it or refinance it, because the $6.325 million mortgage was likely a construction loan, mm-hmm. which was denied. Back to the complaint. When the Hills later on 9/15/23, so the home was purchased on August 1st, 9/15/23 requested proof about where their money was. Defendant Alexander informed the Hills that these funds had been transferred to JP Morgan. When pushed, he told the Hills that the ACH consent form was documentation of that. On or about 9/18/23, 3 days later, the Hills again requested documentation from JP Morgan verifying the funds. On 9/19/2023, the Hills were provided a printout purportedly prepared by Parity, which Alexander represented their asset allocation as of 9/19/23, showing a value of $2,704,863 in the account, and it's attached as Exhibit C. Dame, I have some thoughts. I've reviewed that document. Have you reviewed that document?
That one I have not seen.
Well, the next statement in the complaint goes to how I feel. The asset allocation document was bogus, and in fact, the Hills funds were not in any such account. Back to my thoughts here. Dame, it was one of those things, like if you just like do an illustration, it wasn't, there was no account number per se. It was an illustration of like, hey, if you put this money here, here's how it's allocated, but it wasn't actually an account.
Wow.
Last thought before we hit the commercial. Back to the complaint. On or about 9/22/23, the Hills, feeling uneasy about their dealings with Alexander, requested that their money be transferred back to their Schwab account by Alexander. On or about 9/28/23, Alexander texted the Hills advising that their account was up $25,000 that month. Said comment was false as there was no account. And finally, on or about 9/29/23, the Hills further requested documentation from JP Morgan confirming their account. Alexander responded that he could not get the document until the end of the month. And that's where we break right here on the Pete the Planner Show. Hear the conclusion of this story next. Okay, Dame.
Are we going to have to do something we've never done before and have four segments of show?
I kind of feel like we need to.
Yeah.
I mean, it would like to never have, to not have our fourth segment seems like a problem, but you know what? Like we can't leave details out and yeah. Because it's just not, there's no sense in rushing it.
No, I agree.
Oh boy. All right. So then I'm going to come, I'm just looking at the dates here. Yeah, actually I'm going to come with the criminal news right back.
Okay.
Jeez. What are we doing? Okay, you ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1. Back on the Pete the Planner Show. This episode is different from what you're used to. This episode is covering a civil complaint in Hamilton County Court, Indiana, accusing financial advisor Alexander Joyce and Rejoice Financial of misappropriating $2.6 million, actually just under $2.6 million of money and buying a $2 million mansion in the act. So Damien Dunn joins me. We're reading directly from the complaint and we need to get back to it. Again, said statement by Alexander was false as no account was ever opened at JP Morgan for the Hills. Back to a quick aside, Damien, the money was with Schwab in the summer, in July. They filled out ACH forms to go to TD Ameritrade, and that money was actually ACH'd, allegedly, according to the complaint, into the purchase of a $2 million home on August 1st. And then at some point in time, all of a sudden, the money is magically in JP Morgan, according to this lawsuit, and that in itself is very confusing.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there was actually an account at JP Morgan.
I'm with you there. I don't think there was either. Okay, before I go to this next point in the complaint, which fast forwards to October 22nd of 2023, I think it's important to get another piece of business out there. And I just say this as factual and contextual because I think it starts to talk of the gap that existed between 9/29/23 and 10/22/23. That's a large gap when you don't know where your money is. It's 23 days. Alexander Joyce was in jail. He was in jail he had charges stemming from a DUI and had probationary issues and served time through most of October in jail. That would be the gap.
Yes.
Back to the complaint. On or about 10/22/23, Alexander Joyce provided a circle back wealth management printout that appeared to show the Hills account. However, this printout also included accounts that defender Alexander did not have access to. Circle Black appears to be a wealth management software that relies upon information inputs from the investment advisor, but does not otherwise confirm the information as accurate. The Circle Back, as an aside, within the complaint, it's both described as Circle Black and Circle Back.
Yes.
Okay. A clerical error. Back to the complaint. A printout of the Circle Black accounts page is attached on as Exhibit D. I have reviewed that. As an aside, Damien, have you reviewed that as well?
I did not see that one either.
You have used financial planning software, investment management software in the past, and sometimes it connects directly. It aggregates with the account. It has a back room handshake, if you will, and it's real-time data. Other times you put, oh, I got $50,000 in this account, $16,000 in this account, and then it's a hypothetical input-driven system, and what this complaint is saying is that's what this is.
Correct. Yeah. You can either have that handshake, as you said, where everything is automated, or you can go in and just enter it in. It's a very common thing in financial advising where there's reporting software.
Back to the complaint. On or about 11/5/23, the Hills once again demanded the return of their funds. On or about 11/10/23, the Hills received another document from Alexander purporting to reflect their portfolio. This document was from Foundations Investments and showed a value of $2,684,662. This document was also bogus and is attached as Exhibit E. As an aside, I've reviewed that. Yeah, Damien, it appears to be bogus from what I know.
Sure.
Okay. And our fact checkers online have said it is Circle Black, not Circle Back. Circle Black is the investment service. Thank you for that, Andy. Okay, continuing on. On 12/19/2023, the Hills contacted JP Morgan and were advised that there were no accounts opened under their Social Security numbers. The Hills immediately contacted Alexander and demanded return of their money once again. Aside, the next note picks up on January 17th of this year, 2024, and we've not done this yet, and Dave, maybe this is the whole last segment that we're going to do, but I just have to say at this point in time, I am sick to my stomach about what the Hills are going through, and I'm sick to my stomach that this large gap is occurring over the December holidays, and I cannot imagine when people are generally emotional and retrospective how awful December was for the Hills.
Yeah, you've been in this state of limbo for 6 months at this point. 6 months. And now you're starting to wonder, there have to be doubts creeping in. Is it gone forever? Is it gone for good? I cannot fathom the hell that those two people are going through.
And you say going through, and that is still the reality. Part of the reason this lawsuit exists in part is because they still don't have their money back.
Yeah.
You know, again, I spoke to their attorney this morning. Some on background, some with comment, and they're just trying to get their money back. Okay. Back to the complaint. On January 17th of 2024, Alexander admitted that he had purchased a house with the Hills money and attempted to get them to sign a real estate investors agreement attached as Exhibit F. As an aside, I've reviewed that agreement. Damien, I'm going to speculate here. An attorney had to have been involved with that document. It very much feels like a legal document. And at this point in time, I'm thinking, okay, who else is involved in this? Because it's a pretty intense document that basically says, hey, now this money that you thought was in an Australian thing / TD Ameritrade / JP Morgan, well, months ago, I actually bought real estate and now you own real estate, even though the real estate's in my name. And that's where we're at.
Yeah.
And then we conclude the complaint portion of the complaint with the following phrase. The Hills did not sign the real estate investors agreement and to this date have not received, or have received none of the nearly $2.6 million that Alexander transferred to his account. I don't know civil versus criminal. He's being accused of count one of conversion. He's being accused of count two of breach of contract, count three of fraud, count four of breach of fiduciary duty and constructive trust, count five of constructive fraud, and count six of quantum meruit. This is where I should have paid attention to my Latin courses. And count seven, negligence. Okay. Damien, we got a minute left in this segment or so, and then we're going to talk about this at length in the next segment. The purpose of us discussing this today is nothing about anything other than protecting people from having this happen to them. When you do not check your broker check, when you do not check criminal records or civil records within the place of which you live or where the person resides that might manage your money, these sorts of things happen. And here's the interesting thing. Right here, right now, Alexander Joyce, for most people in our community, have no idea that this is going on. They have no idea any of this has occurred. I don't know if he's still out soliciting business or not. But it is possible, since February 26th of 2024, people have gone into business with him. I don't know. It's just possible. But if they would have checked Indiana criminal records, they would see that this is a person that allegedly cannot be trusted. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. I mean, if you think we are being heavy-handed with the repeated calls for due diligence on the investor or the client's part, I hope you see it for what it is. We are genuinely trying to encourage those to make sure they are protecting themselves and their interests and their families, because that is what we're here for.
What we're going to do when we come back, we're going to talk in specifics what not to do. Where did things go wrong within this? Not victim shaming, but how can you learn from this and make sure it does not happen to you? That is next on the Pete the Planner Show. I'm Pete the Planner. I really don't like being serious this long. It I'm going to throw up.
You're going to do a special fifth segment just to let it all out?
I feel like I'm going to, after this is over, I'm going to, put on a bozo nose and clown shoes and just, go around and squeak a rubber chicken at our colleagues the rest of the day.
You can do what you want.
Also called Friday, right? It's just also called Friday. Here's the other element of this. I guess I'm not necessarily saying this on the radio to the radio audience. I have nothing against Alexander Joyce. I mean, I'm upset in the sense that I don't like, if this is in fact true, it's just terrible. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I have nothing personally against him. And I view anyone in the financial world as a compatriot, a colleague, that we're all just sort of working together to help people. And so I do get upset by this stuff. But these are public filings. It is quite possible. I don't even know how to handicap this, Dame. It's quite possible that in a court, a civil court, that he is able to prove that none of this happened. He's not liable.
I suppose that's possible. We're only hearing one side of the story, and the preponderance of evidence, if the timeline plays out, seems to be fairly reasonable, but we don't have the other side of the story. And while I agree, I like to think that everybody is playing on the same team in the financial industry, trying to help people with their financial lives and get people to that next level and achieve financial stability and the retirement of their dreams. But you and I both know that there are bad apples in every profession, and there are some folks out there who are capable of things just like this, whether or not Mr. Joyce did this. And it's just a tale as old as time, that people are going to take advantage of others. And unfortunately, this is one of the cases we have to consider.
Yeah. Again, speaking to the attorney of the complainants today, these are hardworking people. Whether they worked hard or not, does it really matter? But $2.6 million being allegedly sort of just stolen from them, it's no good. My hope in this show today is a weird one. I hope that this show gets enough listens that other people, if they are in fact victims of this particular advisor, another advisor, are able to discover that and can start the process of being made whole, if that is all humanly possible. That's the hard part.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful goal for this particular show. I also know that a lot of people won't proceed with their suspicions because any number of reasons that they're struggling with, and it's a shame because they have every right to try and be made whole and have their finances managed in a responsible way.
All right, let's see if we can wrap this thing up without me making a joke for an entire show.
That might be more impressive than making you laugh for 6 weeks straight.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Back on the Pete the Planner Show. It's a special episode this week. We are looking with great detail into a civil case that was filed in Hamilton County, Indiana court on February 26th, accusing Alexander Joyce, Rejoice Financial LLC, Rejoice Wealth Management, and Joel Parody of misappropriating, and that's saying it loosely, roughly $2.6 million of clients' money, which was allegedly supposed to be placed in Damien, an Australian investment managed by JP Morgan, TD Ameritrade, back to JP Morgan, and then eventually the receipts suggest and documents suggest that 1 hour after the ACH form transferring the $2.599 million out of the Hills account, 1 hour later, a $2 million mansion was purchased by Alexander Joyce and Rejoice Financial. That's where we're at. Damien, the reason we're doing the show today and the reason we're like, it's not even about risk. It's not even like, oh, hey, I'm not one to want to name names or anything. I just have no interest in it. But here's the thing. This is public record. And there are some massive missteps along the way that potentially could have saved this. And so I'd like to take a couple minutes to talk about them without suggesting that the Hills did anything wrong. It's sort of good, better, best. There's a good thing they could have done, a better thing they could have done, and the best thing they could have done, but good should be good enough.
Sure.
Damon, a blank ACH form. Where does that hit you?
Right in the suspicions. Because that's the ACH form that a client would sign to move the money from a bank account or investment account to another one should be done on the receiving firm's paper, first and foremost. And it should be very clear where that money is being sent to. It'll be sent to the bank that is associated with that firm. And you'll fill in the information of where it's coming from. You'll sign off on it. The advisor will likely sign off on it. But it should be very clear that it's going to that institution, and with no room for change on that, because you want to be sure where that money is going to end up.
There will be a number, I believe, and please correct me even if you don't know if I'm right. There should be a number on that ACH form that gives basically like a transit number for the entity receiving the money, correct?
I think so. It's been a while. It's been a long time since I filled out an ACH form, so I don't know what they look like anymore, but it's very clear on where that money is going.
And for what it's worth, and this is where things get a little wonky, and this is speculative by me, wouldn't it just have been an ACATS form and not an ACH form?
That's one of the challenges that I have. I'm glad you picked up on it, because in my mind, back when I was doing this, you know, a million eons ago, just would have been an ACH or an ACAT, not an ACH.
And so it's an account transfer form, and it's from an investment institution to another investment institution. An ACH form by nature are banking transfers. So it is possible, and again, we're speculating, but we're just like trying to parse this out because this is wild. The money was originally at Schwab. Was it? Did it get moved into a Schwab bank or money market account where it could be ACH'd into another bank? Is that just how it's done today?
I don't know. It had to be in cash. Obviously, it wasn't an in-kind transfer. So there had to be, you know, it move into cash, whether it was a money market or whether it got moved into a checking account. I don't know, but it certainly found its way into a normal bank account.
You know, there's some hidden elements to this, which again is speculative of us, and we're just trying to handle this the best we can. And you just touched on it, whether you know it or not. It came over in cash, which is to say, at one point, it was likely in securities. Mm-hmm. If you're at a Schwab account, it is likely in securities. And so if they were told to liquidate those securities, that is investment advice. And if you're not an investment advisor, you can't tell someone to liquidate securities. That one alone is problematic.
Now, by the way, having an advisor advise you to liquidate securities before they come over is not uncommon, because the cost basis will be cleaned up and tied up there. It'll be much cleaner for reporting purposes if it comes over as cash and you hold on to the investments that you want. But if you know you're going to make some investment changes once the money comes over, it's cleaner if it happens at that original institution. At least, again, eons ago, that's how it was. Maybe cost basis travels much better than it did back then.
I think one of the more interesting aspects of this is, let's call it the period of time from when the transfer occurred to December 19th. Like that period of time where, hey, do we have a statement? Is there confirmation? If you did this transaction on a normal basis, Dame, I'm going to just put it out there. Within 3 business days, it is likely you have a paper confirmation arriving in via the U.S. Postal Service at your home saying that the account was set up and that the deposit took place.
At the very least, you have an account with your name on it, with an associated account number and all of your information, which they clearly never got for an opening account. And then once the ACH hits, you will be able to go on and check it. Everybody has online access to your accounts these days. It should have been super easy for them just to go on and monitor the transfer themselves. It may not show up in their account the exact day it hits the account for posting, but that next day it should have been there. So within 5 days, unless the paperwork gets held up for some silly reason, that money should have made it to its destination.
My biggest fear in this, and part of the reason why I'm hijacking our own radio show to do this today, my biggest fear, and I think it's yours too, but you correct me please, is that this is not the only time. That there's so much sophistication in the grift that I'm nervous that this is not an isolated incident. That's not an accusation. That's just a fear. And I don't know if that's where you are finding yourself as well.
Likely these incidents don't stand alone. It's very uncommon for it to be a single, solitary, isolated incident. And so I, just out of other cases that you and I, I'm sure, could share with each other from other times that this has happened, it's almost always never one.
So I hope I hope the hills are made whole. Again, if what is said in this complaint, or what is purported in this complaint, is in fact the truth, I hope they are made whole, and I hope the state of Indiana does everything they can to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know what the process would be to try and recoup some of this. Unfortunately, I also know that in many cases like this, there's not a whole lot to recover.
Now, one of our listeners via Facebook asked a really interesting question right now, and I'm not going to post their comment. I'm just going to read it because I'll keep them out of this. Pete, is there any issue or fault at Schwab for sending the funds to Rejoice instead of like owner to like owner? I thought about that too. But the nature of a blank ACH form is that the people signed it. you would think it's enough money that it gets escalated within Schwab's system to say, get a second glance at this. But I don't know. What do you think, Dame?
It'd be nice to say there are some internal controls to catch stuff like this, but if it's an ACH form to get the money from A to B and it's completed properly, I don't know if they can really do much about it.
Yeah, and as another one of our regular listeners and viewers note, there's going to be some very strange tax ramifications to this too, with liquidation, investment loss. I just hope the hills are made whole if that is in fact this all plays out that way. So needless to say, Dame, we have let the genie out of the bottle on this one. So we will be giving updates as they occur on this podcast here on out. I never aspired to have a true crime podcast. I really didn't. I actually don't like listening to them. But at the same time, this is pertinent to what we talk about on this show. It is pertinent to operating for the greater good. And so I'll do it. We're going to do these sorts of things. So, Dame, thanks for ending your comedy streak. And I ended my 500-week comedy streak. So we did it together.
Well, here we are.
Send you good vibes, because good vibes are all that's in the budget. I'm Pete the Planner. This is the Pete the Planner Show. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Oh, boy. Oh, Kristen just popped in. She's here. I think she's at the office. She out in the hall?
She might be.
Let me guess. She was traveling today, and if we asked her to walk into the studio right now and go on camera, she would probably rather kill me.
Probably.
All right, Dame. That's it.
That's a brave new world. It's going to take a little while to reconcile how I feel about this show.
I'm nervous because I don't see, this is my opinion, I don't see what money they get back. Okay. Because here's what I think will happen. The property will be liquidated. Okay. Because from what I can tell from records, Ace still owns the property. But and it could be tied directly to it was their money. So there's the idea that, well, that is literally theirs. It's not other assets that are other people's assets. I think that argument could be made.
Paper trail, sure.
Especially given that it happened in less than 60 American minutes.
Yeah.
But what I don't know is if other people are finding themselves in a similar predicament, how does that complicate the proceeds from that $2 million?
The timing, I would assume, would have a lot to do with that. And because unless other cases are brought while this one is still pending, I don't know if there would be anything else to do on it.
So Kristen is currently in the air right now.
Is she in the air? Or is she on like a taxiway or
a ramp? Oh, she's on a 737. So yeah, hopefully she's in the air, because I don't think I authorized go-go in flight on this trip. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
That was a weird flex. It was rude. I'm kidding. Of course, if you want to use Wi-Fi on your flight, that's fine. Just pay for it out of your personal funds.
Exactly.
I mean, for her to listen to us, no, it's impossible. You can't stream. You stream on an airplane?
No. And she told me she was in the middle seat earlier today. So, I mean, she would have been sharing us with two other people.
Well, that would have tripled our listeners. And Dame, before I go and before you go and the day takes hold of whatever's next, you got anything to offer us?
No, I don't. It's a very demure close to the show today. So, yeah, let's take a look at that.
Look at that house. Okay, so for those that are on the podcast, I'm going through the pictures of the estate, the $2 million purchase. It's I drive by this on the way to work every day, by the way. That is Crooked Stick, I believe. It looks like the Masters, that particular. For those that are listening on the podcast, you are listening to me describe pictures, which is not my jam. Here's a picture of construction of this is the final look of what it's supposed to look like, a castle-like stone facade.
Wow, that rear elevation. Yikes. Impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a infinity pool sort of waterfall over a fire pit. Now, again, I'm not a real estate expert by any means, but, and I do mean, but this looks like it would be worth more than $2 million because a pretty ordinary house in that area, rather ordinary, goes for $1 million. So maybe that's where the $6 million mortgage attempt comes from.
There's no way. I mean, you could not do that for $2 million. You couldn't do that for $2 million in Northeast Indiana.
Yeah. All right. Final disclosure here for us. Again, this is about the hills, in my opinion. No one asked us, but this is about the hills. And I'd love to see him made whole. I'm not trying to put pressure on anything. I just don't want people to get caught up in this. So for what it's worth, hope this all works out. Someone else noted something within the comments here that I also thought of earlier this week. Someone said he would have to steal more money, allegedly, just to maintain the monthly upkeep. I thought of that too. I was like, man, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of upkeep. The taxes on that property prior to being built are $36,000 a year.
Prior to being developed, it was $36,000 a year.
Yeah. So the $36,000 prior to development were the taxes. Let me confirm that, because I looked at it earlier today. Here we go. $33,000 on the tax assessment of $2.4 million. $33,000. Well, the tax assessment is not going to be $2.4 million when it's all over.
Yeah. Well, it's a 1% cap in Indiana. So do the math on what the assessment, take your best guess on assessment. So,
you know, I want to do something else here. I want to pull this up. I want to show this on the air here. I want to show the actual map of where this is for those that care. This is off of Ditch Road in Carmel, Indiana, just south of 106th Street. So if you're on Ditch Road and you're driving south, which is how I get to work, you're coming from the north, you're driving south, you cross over 106th Street. Dame, there's a roundabout there.
Of course.
It's on your left. It's on your left. It's a gated neighborhood. It's very large. And it's been built for a few years. And that is the reality there, buddy.
I believe Crooked Stick is north of 106th.
You're right. So it has a Crooked Stick look to it. Crooked Stick is north of 106th and also west of Ditch, for what it's worth. But there's where it's at. Okay, let's be done. It's starting to feel like I don't want it to feel so. All right, Dame. Thank you, everyone else. Stay getting money.